Hello and welcome to Non-Breaking Space, which you can find online at nonbreakingspace.tv. Non-Breaking Space is a show where we'll seek out the best, brightest, and smartest people on the web and talk to them about how and why they do what they do. Your hosts are Christopher Schmidt and Dave McFarlane, two web designers, authors, and trainers who have a passion for sharing knowledge about the web. I'm Chris from Canada, a web designer and podcaster. Christopher and Dave have invited along to help push the record button and keep everyone on track here on Non-Breaking Space. Our guest for this episode is Christina Halverson. Christina lives in St. Paul, Minnesota with her two young children, whom she often quotes on Twitter. She's the founder and CEO of Brain Traffic, a world-renowned content strategy consultancy. She's also the author of Content Strategy for the Web, recently out in its second edition, and is the founder of CONFAB, the Content Strategy Conference. Christina is widely recognized as the industry's leading advocate for content strategy. In 2009, she curated the first Content Strategy Consortium to facilitate a national dialogue about this emerging discipline. Today, Christina speaks regularly to audiences around the world and is well known for her energetic, often humorous talks. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Christopher and Dave in the conversation with Christina.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. Just a little show note off the bat is that Dave can't join us today. He's got a little scheduling conflict, but rest assured he's out there saving the world from bad websites. And joining to me today is Ari Stiles.
Hello.
Yeah. She's my partner in crime at Environments for Humans, where we do like a ton of conferences. Right?
Yes, many.
Right. So people who might not know, what's your background?
Oh, sure. I used to be an education webmaster back in the day, and then I went to work for South by Southwest, working on logistics and graphic design there, and putting on for anybody who's ever been to South by Southwest knows is a gigantic conference.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I was very pleased to make the transition to work with Christopher on much smaller conferences where I actually get to meet everyone that attends and talk to them about their wants and needs and what their lives and their jobs are like. So I'm very excited to be able to do that.
I think one of the interesting things when we first met was, like, you know, you were telling me you're the graphic designer for the interactive stuff, is that I'm not sure they still do this for the interactive publication, but they have everyone's mugshot who's speaking.
Yes.
So you have this fascination, you have this weird thing where you sort of know web celebrity speakers.
Right. You stare at somebody's headshot for long enough and they become familiar to you, even though you've never met them. So I remember the very first South By that I went to, it was very small, I should say. The first one I went to was in 2001. Mm. But the first one in 2003 that I'd actually done the graphic design for, I had stared at everyone's mugshot, and every other person I ran into the hall, this is back when South By was very small, I had this feeling of familiarity that, wow, I think I know everyone here. And then I realized, oh, it was the mugshot issue that I had been staring at everyone's, fooling around with each picture and making the resolution work for the print publication. And I think just from that, it was very disconcerting for that first year that I did it. And then I just kind of realized, you know, I don't necessarily know everyone here, and that's okay.
But you can pick them out of a mugshot now.
That's right.
Please line up right
exactly.
Now. So okay, cool. Well, so South By was, you've been working with them since, you were working with them since when?
I worked with them from 2003 through 2009, starting first just doing the graphic design work and then moving on into advisory board and then becoming a full-fledged staff member, working on logistics, which, again, because it's a huge conference, there are so many logistical issues that they need a lot of people to work on that.
So the web's grown a lot since then.
Yes.
Right. And South By had like 20,000 people for interactive.
Right. So South By Southwest does definitely mirror the web's growth in that regard.
And one of the things that's kind of grown up is, like, you see these emerging disciplines and a lot of special things happening. And one of them is content strategy. So I'm really happy to have our guest for today, Christina Halverson. Christina, are you there?
Hello. Yes.
Hey.
Hi.
Glad to have you here.
I'm trying to think of a joke for Ari where it's just like, do I know you? But I can't.
Oh, man.
So. Yeah. Well, I often get the inverse thing of, like, people kind of know me from me checking them in at South By for a few years too as speakers, and they can't quite place me. Mm. And so that's always an interesting conversation too. And a lot of the times it turns out that I'm the person who checked them in 2007 or something like that.
Well, if you can actually try to remember people from South By Southwest, you're doing
yeah.
it wrong.
Yeah, so that's true.
So, but yeah. So,
Ari, you could say, I either checked you in at South by Southwest or I made out with you when I was drunk at the Adobe party. No, one or the other.
Yeah. No, my fun answer would be, yeah, I'm actually in Austin law enforcement. And
yeah, right.
I'm trying to place you as well.
So Christina, can you just tell us a little about yourself, how you got into the web scene and what you do now? So, and how that transferred to what you do now. So,
sure. Yeah. Let's see. Where to begin? I'm so old now that there's just like 20 years of history to pick from here. I guess that I got into the web scene in about, well, I wrote for my first website in like 1998 for the organization that I was working for at the time, moved on to another company, sort of rewrote their website. I've never liked bad writing. I've always been the person that's like, you can't send that out. Give me that. And then I edit it whether or not it's my job. And so in 2002, I decided to go out on my own as a freelance copywriter and to specialize in writing for the web. And that went very well. In 2005, I hired my first employee. And then in December of 2007, an article came out by Rachel Lovinger called Content Strategy, The Philosophy of Data on Boxes and Arrows. And I read that and I was like, this is what I'm doing. I'm not just writing for websites. Like, that's not all we're doing. We're also, you know, pushing into these strategy meetings and trying to have conversations with people earlier and earlier because filling in the wireframes sucks and doesn't work. So I got real excited about content strategy and I was like, I'm going to learn everything there is to know about this. And I entered it into Google and there were like 8,000 results and 7,500 of them were not relevant. So I basically decided I was going to try to figure out where other people were that were doing this. I found 20 of them total. We all decided to kind of gather together at the IA Summit in 2009 to hold what we called the Content Strategy Consortium. And that was pretty funny because it was a little bit like, I don't know, none of us had ever been in a room with other content strategists before. So we just sort of sat there staring at each other like, you are of my kind. You know, it's like... like being an alien and suddenly discovering there are more of you. So that was like a big deal. That was sort of a turning point. I mean, a lot of people who are out on the speaking service and who are writing books now were there. Margot Bloomstein, Colleen Jones, Karen McGrain, Rachel Lovinger was there. Some of the folks who people who have really started and are leading meetups all over the country. And so it was a really important gathering. And in the meantime, I had been talking to so many smart people about this. I was like, I might as well write a book while I'm at it. So I did. I wrote Content Strategy for the Web. That came out in August of 2009, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? It has not been that long. And then I started doing a lot of speaking and it was pretty interesting. And I don't know how many people remember this, but in 2008, like at UX conferences, nobody was talking about content. There wasn't a single presentation on content at any of these conferences. Like every once in a while you would see one about web writing, but that was it. And now, you know, these conferences are just like lousy with content strategists, and Alista Part has, you know, an entire, like they have content strategy articles every month, it seems like. So it's been really, really, really exciting to see how sort of that initial research and hard work and advocacy that I've shared with a lot of people has sort of like taken off. And I think last time I Googled content strategy, there were like well over 2 million results. So it's really caught fire. So that's kind of, and now Brain Traffic, we're just around 20 people. We do large content strategy projects for big, exciting companies. And that's how I got into content strategy. Also, I have a theater major from a small liberal arts college.
Wait a second. I think you just stepped over, like you just glossed over the theater major part.
Yeah,
there,
I know. So. You know what's really you know what's really funny though? A, there are actually many secret theater majors among content strategists, which I'm sure that people who are like, there is no such thing as content strategy would be like, see, they're just making it up as though it were a big as though it were just one big script. You know,
Yeah, but they're all in collusion, I'm sure.
They all meet secretly and have sing-alongs to Broadway's tunes from Carousel or whatever.
That's right. It's like Skull and Bones, but no.
Exactly. Yeah, but for theater major content strategists. What? Wait. But it's been pretty funny because, you know, my parents were just horrified that this is what I had chosen to major in. They were like, you're going to grow up and be an English teacher. But now, of course, I get to, with all, I do just tons of public speaking. And so now I'm just like, ah, it paid off.
Right, right. Well, do you run into a lot of people that just don't understand what you do?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, and it's that I think has been a little bit of a struggle for people to really be able to articulate, no, I'm not an editor. No, I don't, you know, I'm not like a content management person. I don't know. I'm not a web designer. I mean, that's when I first talk to people about what Brain Traffic does, you know, I say the words content. I say the words, things like workflow within an organization. And they're like, so you design the website, right? I mean, and that has been a really interesting thing to sort of push back against, is that I think that people have thought of the web for so long primarily as like design and technology, because the content is just like a given, right? It just magically appears and magically takes care of itself. And so talking about the web, you know, from the perspective of like content is sort of central to the user experience, people are just like, what? Although nobody would argue with you. Right. If you talked about it.
Well, like one of the things I was researching for this podcast was like, one of the things I think you said was like, you need to treat your content like a business critical asset.
Sure.
And I think that is just a great, you know, way of just encapsulating it, but something that encapsulates. Yes.
Yes.
I'm not a word major, whatsoever, but yeah, so it's like, you want to treat your content like a business critical asset. And I think that's, you know, I think it's very important because even back in the early days of the web, David Siegel, if anyone remembers, but he wrote a book called Secrets of Successful Websites, or Secrets of Successful Sites Without the Web in it. But, he held a little like book launch party, and he's like, how many people, you know, what is your biggest pain point in developing webs? And this is websites back in the day. And everyone raised their hand. When he mentioned getting content from clients, you know, that was like the biggest pain point. So,
oh,
like,
sure.
You,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, if you go back to, I think it's, is it Web Project Management 2.0 or something by Kelly Godot? There is literally in their chapter about content, the main message is the content is going to be late. The content is going to be a problem. So just plan for that and charge for it and just expect it. And I was just like, that's not acceptable. Like, there are solutions to this. You can't just tell people, oh yeah, there's no fix to this, or just plan for it. You know, there are ways to plan for it. And I mean, that is when you get into implementation of the content strategy, that becomes content planning and content execution and, you know, designing and implementing workflow and things like that. So there are fixes to it, but frankly, your clients aren't set up to treat content like a product, right? Mm-hmm. They don't, again, they're just like, oh, we'll take care of it. We have plenty of content, but they don't have a workflow. They don't have anybody who owns it. The people they're asking for the content is like, that's on top of their regular jobs. And they don't have the kinds of documentation that they need to be able to deliver this. They don't, you know, they get a list of what they're supposed to write. And so they pull out a Word document and that's what they do. Or they're given a wireframe to map it to, and they don't know what a wireframe is. I mean, this is all stuff that I experienced when I first started writing for websites when I was working with agencies. And I think that that's a lot of the work that I did initially in content strategy. You know, I thought I was making all this stuff up, and it was mostly just putting together tools that were going to save my ass in the 11th hour. Then I found out other people were making up the same thing. So that was exciting too. Yeah.
That's always a lovely light bulb when you run into other people that have the same little obsessions that you do. And I mean that in the best way possible.
Well, that's exactly what we experienced at that content strategy consortium, you know, where we were all just like, oh, you live and breathe this stuff too. Great. Let's go have bourbon.
Well, let's see if we can try to define, like have not define content strategy, but like maybe just have a definition and see if that works. And then build off of that. So would you say like content strategy is the and I'm actually quoting you, so I hope this works. But
so you're gonna ask me if I agree with my own quote? Is that what you're about
yes.
to do?
Yes, but there's a little twist to it.
It's actually doing the baseline.
Yeah, we're doing the baseline, but there's actually a twist to it. It's actually let me give the definition. Because this is back in 2009 is when this was said. It was like content strategy is the practice of planning for the creation, delivery, and governance of useful, usable content. Is that, you know, that's a really nice little sweet.
And since the definition is from 2009, have you modified that in any way in your mind?
We did modify that. The second edition of Content Strategy for the Web just came out in March, and I actually pulled in Brain Traffic's Vice President of Content Strategy, Melissa Rock, to help me co-author it. She acted as a technical editor in the first book, and it was just more appropriate that she was recognized in this as the co-author so that she could really take more ownership of it. And the reason for that is that, you know, she's been leading this team of content strategists internally while I have been out banging the big drums about this topic for the past 2.5 years. And, you know, one of the things that we have sort of recognized from the work that she's been leading and the work that obviously our team has been evolving, which happens, you know, at lightning pace, is that, you know, there's all this argument about like what is strategy and what is tactic and what is goal and what is objective. And I mean, the dictionary definition is that strategy is a plan to reach a goal, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about, and that is exactly where I kind of pulled the planning piece from. But when you are talking about sort of, and I believe that at the project level, that is still a very accurate description. I do believe that. I think that when you start getting into sort of like larger enterprise level content strategy, you've got to look at it more as a guide, as like your strategy is your lighthouse, just like a marketing strategy, just like a business strategy. You know, that is the lighthouse that guides you through working towards implementation of all your tactical efforts. So we talk about that a little bit more in depth in the book rather than saying, here's the definition. But I, to this day, and I always will, is, you know, a lot of the audiences that I speak to are just like, what do you mean content matters? And what is this thing called content strategy? And, you know, I mean, it's true. And that is when you live and breathe this stuff, you forget that that's like 98% of the world, right? And so I still use that really simple definition because it helps people get their brains wrapped around it really quickly. But when you look into the more complex work that different individuals and teams are running with across, you know, the practice, it can get a little stickier and hairier. But I will also say, I think that a big part of why content strategy has taken off is because we were able to find a common, easy to understand shared language so that we could start talking to people outside of our own little content cliques about what it was and why it was matter and why it matters. And that is why I still use that definition all the time.
Yes, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I think all those steps fall in just about any, in the evolution of just about any discipline. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, we talk all the time, or I guess I talk all the time about how we are totally tracking with where user experience was 12 years ago or where IA was 10 years ago. I mean, it's the same journey. And actually, I have talked to Lou Rosenfeld, who wrote Information Architecture for the World Wide Web, the Polar Bear book, several times, right? Several times about, okay, tell me what you think held back the evolution. Tell me what you think you guys are still struggling with, you know, and have sort of worked in my own work anyway to nip that stuff in the bud if I see it evolving, or really trying to focus on the things that he has said, you know, go in this direction, be more constructive here.
So what things have you have you've nipped in the bud, I guess? Like, what things have you seen?
Well, this is, I mean, not like I'm lording over the content strategy community. You know, you shall not speak of this again. I just mean this stuff, you know, the workshops that I've had, the writing that I've done, the things that I've sort of chosen to, I mean, you know, I have an audience, right? And so I do have sort of this ability to shine the spotlight on certain topics or people or books or whatever. And I just, the whole like nitty gritty, what does this mean? And you guys don't, you're talking about content strategy in the wrong way. And this is really what content strategy is. Or we've been doing this for 15 years. I don't know why this is such a big deal all of a sudden. All of that, like that conversation is not constructive. That is not helping anybody get the work done. And so I ignore it.
Yeah. That works. Yeah. No, I think that's great, actually.
I'm just saying that, like, I don't point whatever audience I have from my work to those conversations. I would much rather shine the spotlight on the two articles that appeared in A List Apart recently by Rachel Levenger. I would rather, you know, I don't know, if I see somebody who's really cranking out a bunch of great blog posts, I'd rather talk to them about introducing them to a publisher for a book.
I
talk about that as like using my powers for good.
Yes. Well, it's also, I would say that it's usually easier to point to what something is. It's a much smaller list than what something isn't, because
is very, very, very insightful and very true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so just to help clarify, like, just I guess more. But so when we talk about content, you know, it's not just text. It's not just, you know, it's not just text. You know, it's other things. It's like the image. Is it the and is it the brand of a company or organization? Like, what can content be, and what it, you know, and that's a kind of a vague, open-ended question, but just for their audience, like, what type of things can a content strategist cover in terms of, you know, when they go through their work?
Yeah. Well, I think those are great questions. I think that there are also kind of two individual questions. So let me tackle the what is content first. You know, I'm going to point you to what a couple of other people have talked about. And I mean, we do cover this in the book a little bit, but Erin Kassane has a couple of just brilliant posts about her perception of content and what that is. And, you know, that content lives inside containers, and those containers are web pages or web modules or applications or, you know, whatever is carrying content, whatever is making the content go. And yeah, that can be all of the pieces of information or assets that people come online looking for and to use. So yes, absolutely. Images and data and the, you know, textual content, obviously, and video and audio and all of those things. There is further conversation about whether or not content includes, we have called sometimes internally, we've called them content facilitators, or things that make the content go, which might be the back-end metadata. It might be interface copy for task-based processes. I don't know. I don't like lumping those two things into the same bucket, and I don't know necessarily if I would consider them content I don't know. The thing is that content strategists can work with all of that stuff, right? Like, I mean, a content strategist can go in and help inventory and audit content that exists in software as a service online, for example. A content strategist is going to get their hands dirty with metadata schemas and attributes and identifying how to structure content in a way that it can be portable across multi-channels and multiple devices. So there are so many different ways in which content strategists can work with and focus on content that it is it's a bigger bucket, I think, than some people might be comfortable with. I will also say I like Joe Gulner as sort of like the content philosopher. Mm-hmm. He writes these gigantic, like 5,000 word blog posts. He's awesome. But one of the ways that he defines content is data with the potential to become information. I just totally like bastardized that quote. Or maybe he defines information as data with the potential to become knowledge. I can't remember. but he has a lot of really interesting insights about what content is and how we use it and how it can act as a business asset.
Right. So it's like content is static until it comes together and becomes actionable for the visitor.
Yeah, that it requires context, that it has to be findable. Like it's mm-hmm. and unless, you know, if it's just sitting, it's like a file. If it's just sitting in a box of papers, or take it as that, it's not anything. It's just a bunch of papers. But once you get it and process it and put it to use and have context and it has application, then it becomes something that is valuable.
Okay.
That's getting a little esoteric for me. I don't know.
I know. Wow, we're up in the clouds.
Dude, I was just feeling comfortable in this esotericness.
But, yeah.
But one thing I do want to talk about is the govern part of it and the governance. And I see that coming up, especially in higher ed. We do a lot of higher ed work with people, and I'm trying to do that. And the web governance is a big issue because you have a lot of in their context, it's a you have a university websites, you have colleges websites, and you have a lot of people who want the football, but no one knows what to do with the football when they get it, sort of thing. And So you get this. So is that sort of the same thing as governance or content strategy?
For sure. One of the things that, in my mind, one of the real powers of content strategy, and one of the things that makes it so central and critical within any organization that deals with content, which is any organization, is that it really does the job of creating, of bridging content as a product, which we talk about with regard to the substance of it, what is it, and the structure, you know, how are we organizing it, making it findable, usable, manageable, etc. It links those two things with workflow. How is content moving throughout an organization, and what are the tools we're using to make it go? And governance, which is how are we taking care of content over time? Who is empowered to make decisions about the content? What are the standards and guidelines and policies by which we guide and make decisions about our content and our content strategy? And I, by the way, that particular definition of governance is totally ripped off from Lisa Welchman and the work she's done in web governance, which the content strategy community loves her. But anyway, it links those two things together. And so you're absolutely right. Higher ed, what they do is content. That's what they do. They create content. They transfer knowledge. There's a lot of it, and everybody yes. owns it. Everybody is emotional about it. Everyone believes that their work is is more important than everyone's work. You know, that is just the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. So when you have all that stuff, but you have no one who is providing any sort of, or any kind of governance team who is providing sort of oversight and is empowered to make choices about the larger content ecosystem, it just is it's like the wild, wild west of content. And government is another perfect example of where that happens. So we actually, Confab, the Brain Traffic's Content Strategy Conference is coming up in May, and we actually have a presentation on a smaller organization, the Normandale Community College here in the Twin Cities, who they might be smaller, but they still have the exact same problems. And they actually put together, they successfully were able to establish a web governance board that has helped sort of create clarity from the chaos around their content. And it's just a really powerful story about that.
So now we have content strategy, we have a kind of definition of it. There's a lot of issues with the politics and the development of content, and there's content itself is broad, but it could also be very fixed, depending on the context. And you also have to worry about deliverables of the content. When I'm trying to grasp my head around this, because I've been on the web for a long time, and it just, I grew out, from one person doing everything to now where I have very specialized roles. It just seems like this is almost like a content strategist is almost the role of a web project or project manager. Would that be a good analogy? Or,
I think that the content strategist does some of that in that they facilitate, right? I would not suggest that I don't think the content strategist is the person to be doing traffic, for example. I don't think that they are going to sort of coordinate all of the activities and deliverables and things like that. What I do think, though, is that the content strategist has a real opportunity, similar to a project manager, to engage people cross-silo, right, and cross-discipline. So a project manager might be in touch with the UX team, the tech team, the subject matter experts, all these different folks, the primary stakeholders, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the content strategist needs to be there, too. Like, the content strategist has got to be involved with anything and everything that is going to be touching this content. And, I think that is something that has burned us in our project process, is that we think of content as like a deliverable and only a deliverable. And so we pull in the writer or the photographer or the image licensing folks later, when the deliverable we think is due, right? But in reality, the content strategist is someone who is gathering all this information that we have treated as disparate information and pulling it together and synthesizing it in a way early in the process that they can then make recommendations and plan for better content creation, production, publication, or delivery, how it can be reused in the future and how it's going to be taken care of over time. And so in that sense, I think that there are some similarities, but I would really define them as differently as one might define a UX designer or strategist from a project manager.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
It just seems like they're same but different.
Talk to me about how, I'm interested, just to give me a little bit more context, where do you see the similarities?
I see that they're at, I just see like a project manager or web project manager is, and I could be totally wrong too, so I don't know, but is that they're in charge of the brand, in charge of the deliverables, charge of the message, making sure it gets delivered there. But I see a content strategist maybe more focused and making sure that message and that content gets delivered, and that could be a sweeping generalization. I'm not really sure. So, but I see that they work in parallel a lot of the times. So, I like the idea of a project manager and a content strategist working in the various aspects of it, because content to keep that all in your head for a project manager, and as well as all the things that they have to deal with, as well as on top of dealing with the content, I think it would be great to have someone who is just focused and dedicated to the content strategy portion of it, because it's very easy for that to get clouded, even with the best intentions, which I think a lot of websites are that way. That's kind of where by your answer with that. So.
Yeah, I think the way that you are describing a project manager is not like the project managers that I've worked with. I mean, to me, what you're describing is more of like a producer or the project lead. Sure. I think that person, there are way too many details and way too much upfront analysis. Right. I mean, it's really, I always, when I teach a content strategy workshop, if I have 8 hours, 6.5 of those hours are spent on audit, analysis, and definition. like strategy, setting strategy goals. I mean, setting a strategic direction and then making high level recommendations about how that's going to happen. The actual implementation piece of it is like, mm-hmm. I spend an hour on that because that's not where content strategy happens per se. Right. The content strategy can help facilitate that. Mm. But all of that other stuff, the content strategy, that's where the buck stops for content. And that has never, ever in my experience been a project leader or a project manager any more than the buck would stop with those people for, I don't know. It's hard for me to compare deliverables, but yeah. So that's where I differentiate it.
Yeah. It just seems like, and also the governance issue, I think that just, I'm not sure how granular you want to be with it, but you know, it just, if you have the right project manager, I think I was talking to Ari. It's just like you want to have a project manager who's, you know, the description of project manager, all the skill sets involved, the ones that they don't put on the the job description is deal with our political minefield. You know, they'll say please make sure everyone is ego is massaged and they're okay with what you're doing, which is really new and probably abhorrent to our likes and our tastes. So, but we realize that it needs to get done. So a project manager can come in and deal with that governance issue with, you know, especially with higher ed, and try to make sure that, and you know, make sure everything, you know, is possible, and make sure people can actually, like the content strategist and the designers and the coders and the programmers can actually feel empowered to do mm-hmm. their job. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, definitely. Feel like that.
Excellent. No, I just have been, you know, we talked about this before too, and I just, you know, for the teams that I've been on, you know, regardless of, you know, what the discipline was, it seems like everyone who is an empowered member of a team is a manager on some level. And so, you know, they're very much in charge of what they're doing, whether they're, you know, regardless of how many others they affect through what they're trying to do as a member of the team. So, yeah. So we were talking a little bit more also about all of these approaches when you're looking at governance and that sort of a thing. And so I was wondering how your approach changes when you are coming into a company versus working from within. And so I wonder about how creating a content strategy differs when you're an in-house team versus like just coming in and working from the outside as a contractor.
Well, I mean, I think that the answer to that is probably similar to what it would be for a visual designer or a UX strategist or, you know, the director of customer experience. I mean, when you're being brought in as a consultant, there is sort of a specific business problem that we're being asked to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And some people want just the audit and analysis piece. Some people want the full 360 on through implementation and ongoing training. But ultimately, you know, if you're working in-house, things don't typically come to you, you know, there's rarely a beginning and an end to things. It's sort of things overlap and deliverables and projects and shifts in strategy, you know, those things don't happen sequentially. They sort of happen cyclically and overlapping each other. And so there's a different level of relationship and involvement that you need to have and a different level of knowledge, I think, that you need to have with your product or service than any kind of outside consultant is necessarily going to be able to sort of live up to within a short period of time. I mean, it's like if you're an established, committed person within an organization, a consultant is always going to be an outsider, right? Unless they, I mean, mm-hmm. even if they're embedded for a long period of time. I think that one of the, I mean, this is, you know, to be perfectly candid, people pull in consultants for one of a very finite, you know, number of reasons, one of which is they simply don't have the in-house capacity to do it, whether if it's from like a resource, you know, just purely time perspective, skill sets, etc., or they're pulling in a consultant because they have stuff that they need to get done that for one reason or another, from a political standpoint or from a priority standpoint is simply not happening. I think the third part is that people will say the same thing over and over and over again, and no one will listen to them. But then you bring in a consultant who sort of, you know, is like the fancy person who can say that thing in a different way with more charts and graphs. I'm not suggesting that this is us, but that they will, you know, that they will, they become the expert. And I do say that to some of my clients who want to bring me in to do like the expert song and dance, you know, use me as your weapon. Like, let's figure out what you want to accomplish here. And then I will come in and do the consulting and the facilitation of discussion so we can get you closer to it.
Right, right. Well, among the companies and organizations that you work with that you feel like they get it and that they're successful in creating and implementing their content strategy, what are the commonalities that you see in those organizations and companies?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there are a couple of things, one of which is that we actually write about this. Melissa Rock wrote a great blog post about this, and we wrote about it a bit in the book too. Part of it is organizations who have some sort of process or the personality, the culture of the organization is where people can actually reach alignment. Like, that is a really key thing. And oftentimes we can tell, even in the proposal process, whether or not that organization is going to be is going to have a successful experience and be able to successfully launch and implement and care for a content strategy, or if it's just going to be a constant uphill battle. And so that, I think, is a big, big piece of it. Like, how collaborative are these teams and how good are they at getting aligned on whether it's point of view or strategic direction or what resources are required, et cetera. So that's a big part of it. I think another thing is that leadership has got to value content as a critical component of their brand, of their service, of their relationship to their customers and prospects and folks, or if you're a nonprofit, your donors and the people you serve, et cetera, education, your students, et cetera, et cetera. Those people have got to understand that content is a really critical component to a good relationship and a successful relationship with those folks. You know, just the same thing that user experience designers have been saying for 10 years. If you provide a good experience for your users, it's going to have a positive impact on your company's bottom line. The thing is that you can't design a good user experience when you're dealing with bad content. And so, you know, leadership has got to understand that. They have to understand that content is a complex beast and that it requires dedicated resources to create and care for, and be willing to make that investment. Because if you know, the organizations where we get pulled in by middle management and they're like, oh, I have to present several layers up, you know, because I know content is important, but these people are going to take some convincing. Those projects almost never get off the ground.
Right, right. And speaking of things that never get off the ground, I was intrigued by something you said in another interview about content management systems. And I have to say that I was that person in the early 2000s that really thought that when we implemented a content management system in our office, that it was somehow magically going to take care of so many of the content problems that we were having. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that a lot of people have, I hope a lot of people have let go of that notion, but I'm curious about, no?
And now the crying part.
Yeah, exactly. The gnashing of teeth. But I wonder about what other, you know, smoke and mirrors or other follies that maybe people are convincing themselves now, or what is maybe the trendy folly that people have that, you know, like by doing X, Y, or Z, we are taking care of our content well.
Oh, I love the word folly. I'm going to start using that. The CMS thing is still a huge thing. Well, if we can just improve our backend technology, that's going to help. If we can, I mean, we had, you know, I've heard of people who are, you know, they're like, if we can just do an audit of our content and then reorganize it, that's going to help, you know, or the redesign. Let's just redesign our site. You know, that's going to, and we'll reorganize some stuff on the front end and that'll help. Or we need to rewrite our site and that will help. Or let's focus on user generated content because maybe our users will just make the content for us. I mean, you know, I think that the folly is we can undergo a standalone effort related to our website or our mobile app or our intranet or our CMS, and that that's going to fix things. And it's not. Like, I mean, content is complicated. It is touched by, you know, it's not just a product. It's the people who are creating and caring for that product. And in fact, I would suggest, I mean, we kind of agree around here that most often the problem with your content is the people component, you know, and that it's just the Wild West. And so none of that is going to fix it. I mean, the folly is thinking that you can tackle one piece of the puzzle and that everything is going to be better. Now, you can make parts of it better, you know, like you can redo a website and be super thrilled with the content and structure and launch it and throw a party. But like 3 months later, it's going to suck again because you don't have any kind of governance. And so, you know, but at the same time, it's a huge undertaking and that requires really, I mean, that backs into the very organizational design of our companies. And so it's a larger undertaking that is going to require, you know, smaller proof points along the way. And so I think just the perspective that like any of these one things is going to save the day is not true. Like it's just going to take a lot of facilitation and coordination and digging and facing up to maybe what are some hard truths to get things on track. And nobody wants to hear that.
Well, okay,
this is why
that,
this is why I have lots of jokes in my presentation. Right?
You got to try to keep it light somehow, right? Right.
Oh, well, okay. I totally. Yeah, people are always totally depressed. I mean, some people like want to just weep during my presentations, and then I'm like, "Hey, bunnies."
Yeah. Well, they're pushing the rock up the hill. You know, visit the people in the trenches, and I have so. You know, I used to be that person, and then you know, for some tasks, I still am that person.
Yep.
And so,
yep.
I think we all have a lot of empathy for each other. And
oh
so,
yeah, for sure. That's actually part of what's was so great about launching Confab, our content strategy conference, is that it was like one big group content therapy.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Well, bearing that in mind, do you have a quick win? Like what is a person, something that someone can go out and do right now if they're interested in content strategy?
Well, aside from buying the second edition of content strategy.
Right. Yeah. There's the one quick win.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Go buy a copy of my book. That will be an immediate quick win. Go ahead. Right.
Yeah, so the second one is also to realize it's not a one-day fix. It's going to be a lifetime. Right. But to get started, though, what is that quick win? Like, what that art's mission? Like, what would be that way to get started?
Yeah, well, I think that something that I say all the time that is an easy, is a really, really great way to demonstrate how screwed up things are or to begin to build a business case, you got to start getting your arms around what you have. And so doing some kind of a content audit where you're actually going in and recording what you have, where it lives, whether or not somebody owns it, the last time it was updated, even doing a little bit of qualitative analysis, you know, is it still relevant? How is it readable? How inconsistent is our voice and tone? Like being able to sort of record those things and really bring them in and clearly demonstrate them to stakeholders is a huge way to kind of get people's attention. And if you can do that too and identify some sort of quick wins, that might help as well. That's the first thing. I mean, I will say too. That Melissa and I wrote this book. I'm gonna pimp the book for just a second. Melissa and I wrote this book in a very, I mean, it's under 200 pages. We wrote it in a very plain English, straightforward, conversational way. It's purposely, you know, organized in a way that people can get their brains wrapped around it. And quickly there, you know, it starts off with like one chapter. That's just like, if you don't read any other chapters, read this first, because there are five things that you can do starting now to like start to fix your content. And so that actually has been a pretty good weapon for people to use internally. So that, and if nothing else, that will help identify some more of those quick wins.
Great. Great.
And if you buy the book, I will make 25 cents.
Yay. So it's a small quick win for you as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right. Right. Well, I think that's about all of the questions we have, except for the big one that Christopher asks at the end of each show.
Yeah, we usually have like a question. Where are you most excited and passionate about the web right now? Like, what do you see?
You didn't tell me you were going to ask that question.
Don't dodge a question.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Did I mention my theater major?
Well, remember, the first answer is usually the best one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, frankly, what am I most excited about? I am most excited about the incredible focus on content that I am seeing at every single conference and every single publication, every single, you know, interview or whatever that I have. Like, people are really starting to go, oh, we need to take this seriously. Because ultimately, and tied to that is, you know, with the introduction of responsive design, which is going to make us make it easier for us to sort of design across devices and platforms and channels, what are we going to do with our content? How can we begin to create content and prioritize it and structure it on the front end so that it can be future friendly, so that it can be adaptive? And so all of these really cool, and who's going to do that? And what is that going to look like? And so there are all of these really cool conversations coming together around, you know, what is it going to take for us to get this content to the right people in the right place at the right time so that we can like create stellar user experiences for them no matter where they are. And that is what I'm super excited about. And, you know, that's a really great conversation. It's really terrific to have. But at the same time, lots and lots and lots. In fact, most of organizations still haven't figured out their damn website, right? Like, they're still mucking around in 1.0. And so, but they're starting to pay attention. And so on a personal level, I'm really excited about that because they're more and more receptive to the message that I will sort of continue to push, which is simply that content matters and it's complicated and you have to start considering it from a strategic standpoint or you're going to lose.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing I love about content strategy is that it's actually bringing the discussion about the content and the goal, like what are we doing with the visitor to the website? You know, what do we do once they're there? And I think there's a lot of websites out there that be like, well, we're not really doing anything. We're just kind of like, you know, just showing around and we're like not, we're wasting everyone's time. And so,
but see, they don't know that or they don't think that until people call us for, and they're like, oh, we need to do an audit here. We need to restructure this here. And the first question we ask is, well, what business problem are you trying to solve? And it's just like, it shuts them down, you know?
Right.
And we're just like, well, then what's the point?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's why I like it actually shuts me down. We're like, oh, what is our business problem that we're having? And like, trying to get that question that should have been asked.
Yeah. Only how long ago? From this,
right? Yeah. So that's what I love about.
And then like, we this. Never hear from them again.
And that's what I love. I never hear from those guys again. And it's been great. I think that kind of wraps it up. But where can people find you online and on Twitter and the websites and everything?
Yeah, we recently launched a one-page website for Brain Traffic. It's just a little experiment that we're doing. So you can go see what we're all about at braintraffic.com. You can find out more about our book, Content Strategy for the Web, which I wanted to call Content Strategy for All, but we couldn't change title, at contentstrategy.com. And I am on Twitter at Halvorson, HALVORSON. Be warned that on Twitter, I am my own best audience and may share jokes that mostly just crack me up.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And thank you for Ari.
Thank you for having me. And I'm so glad to get to talk to you, Christina. I love that. I also love that this conversation is coming more to the fore. I think it's only going to help everyone.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And you guys really did ask great questions. So thanks. This was a pleasure.
Our thanks to Christina Halvorson for joining us on Non-Breaking Space. You can check out the show notes for this episode at nonbreakingspace.tv, where we'll have all the links discussed in this episode. We're also in the iTunes podcast listing, and we'd really appreciate if you subscribed and left a rating or review. It helps us spread the word about Nonbreaking Space. Be sure to watch for the next episode of Nonbreaking Space, where you'll be able to hear Aaron Walter say,
"And if I could wipe one word from any design conversation, it would be the word pretty. That drives me bonkers because it implies that it's trivial.